Welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a program dedicated to informing you about organizations that serve our community and how you can get involved with them. Here's your host, Chris Evans.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a pre-recorded production of Entercom Communications. My name is Chris Evans and my guest today is Dr. Saria Sicosio. Welcome back, you ambulatory chief medical officer of Prisma Health U.
Good morning, Chris. Glad to be back.
Well, thank you very much. You were on vacation last week, which is perfectly fine and I'm certain well-deserved, but this is now episode 15 of the COVID Chronicles, and we are glad to have you back. Just off the bat, one of the articles that I came across this week, and I don't know if you'll have seen it, and I'm going to summarize it as best I can, was that Italy, we remember several months ago, Italy being kind of a hotspot for this pandemic as it started to spread across the world, and that was a location, a particular country in which it became very bad very quickly. And now some study has been done of the wastewater, and I'm not sure exactly how they conducted this study, if they, I don't know, save samples from, you know, over a period of time, or if they were able to determine it, you know, in retrospect or what. But they've done a study of the wastewater and discovered that there was evidence of coronavirus in Italy as far back as December. Italy had their first suspected cases right around the beginning of February, and it wasn't until the middle of February that they were starting to confirm these cases. And since this is a new virus, as we've said before, there's a lot we don't know about it. Are you aware of any similar research or attempts here in the United States, in the research that you've done, are you aware of any similar attempts to sort of backdate the origins of COVID-19 in the United States or even here in the upstate or the state of South Carolina in a similar way?
Yes, I am reading that there are spots, there are questions of whether or not individuals were exposed and positive with COVID-19 prior to the sentinel case or the first case that we experienced in the U.S. It's very difficult to tie those down at that time. We didn't have widespread testing, but there is suspicion that there possibly could have been other COVID-19 cases. So, and if you ask me my opinion, I would say absolutely, because we have one sentinel case. What makes it the sentinel case is it's the first officially documented COVID-19 positive case in the country.
That's the one we found.
Other countries would experience. Correct. Yes.
Okay. I was struck by this article because it seemed like a rather novel approach. Instead of just doing the testing, the sort of standard testing that we've been doing along and along that we're going to talk more about later, they were studying the wastewater and finding evidence of coronavirus as far back as December. Have you heard about any other methods of determining whether people have had coronavirus that doesn't include sticking a swab in someone?
This is the first I've heard of a wastewater testing validation, but now that this is out in the media, I would not be surprised if we began to see other ways and other conduits to identify or confirm COVID-19 in particular areas. So I think we all need to stay tuned.
Certainly,
COVID-19 continues to represent itself in many different ways as we're experiencing now in South Carolina.
Well, and we continue to learn more and more about it. In fact, one of the things that happened just this past week is that the city of Greenville passed an ordinance requiring face coverings if people are if anybody, not just employees, but if anybody is going to go into a grocery store or pharmacy, places like that, that they have to be wearing some sort of a mask now. And that's something that I wanted to focus on for a minute, because we've talked a little bit about masks before and why it's important to wear them and things like that. But I wanted to spend a little more time on it. First, let's talk about the proper use of masks. We've heard stories and seen pictures of people pulling masks down over their noses, you know, so that their mouth is covered but their nose isn't, or even cutting holes in their masks because they have trouble breathing. How should you handle a mask to make sure that it's as effective as it can be?
Yeah, so it's interesting, Chris. Of course, we started our COVID Chronicles with proper mask wearing and social distancing and the principles for COVID-19 for safety and prevention. And it's very fascinating to me that we are back to this subject. And it's when it becomes pertinent to us that our interest is piqued once again. So let's walk through that. For masking, it's very important that both your nose and your mouth is covered. And there's many reasons for this. Now, I'll share with you that my husband and I were having this discussion about, well, the mouth is the most important area. And true, in many cases. And as we were walking through different scenarios of, when you sneeze, does it only come out of your nose? Does it come out of your mouth? When you cough, does it only come out of your mouth? When does it come through your nose? But every opportunity we have to prevent the spread requires the covering of your nose and your mouth. Very important. And a tight fit, or at least a firm fit around your face. And if you're standing next to someone and standing to the side, you may not feel their breath as much as standing right in front of them. And if they're breathing, you might be able to sense that. If you can feel someone's breath on you, then you clearly know that viral particles can be transferred that way. That's why gaps on the side of the face are not good. If you're going to wear a cloth mask, it's best to have one with multiple layers. And it's got to be over your nose and your mouth. And it certainly doesn't benefit us if it's around your neck. We often see that in the public as well.
Right. We do see that if people have to, talk to somebody. Some people find it difficult to speak with the masks on. And my guess is that you really just need to try your best rather than pull it down, because then it's not effective if it's not on your face at all. You mentioned having the sides open. And I know that a lot of people have been getting so-called surgical masks that just kind of cover up the face and loop over the ears, but they do leave these sort of gaps on either side around the mouth. They get them because they're cheap, they're disposable, they're easy to find, relatively easy to find in this day and age. So are those going to be effective at all, or should we opt for something that's a little more tight-fitting?
Well, it's better than nothing. The more form-fitting around the face, the better. So we want to find the best material and equipment available in our community, understanding we don't necessarily have N95 masks for everyone, and surgical masks don't fit everyone perfectly. But considering that, and we are seeing more and more cloth masks, and I'm glad to see at least we have some face covering, just being sure that that's layered material, that we're washing them from time to time, and also replacing those masks over time.
The cloth masks, I know, again, are something that people are starting to produce and procure. And we've also heard talk about N95 masks. I saw an interesting video, I think it was this week or last week, that was describing what an N95 mask actually is and why it's different than other masks and why it's better than other masks. And it has to do with the way that the fibers can catch particles of very large and very small, proportionally very large and very small dimension. Except it's the middle ones that are the most difficult to catch, the ones that are kind of between the large and the small ones, and that N95 refers to the percentage of those sorts of particles that will be trapped by that kind of mask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's no perfect tool. We're trying to find the best tool available to us. You're right. Nothing's 100%. But if we were wearing masks when we were in public and exposed to others, especially when we're not able to social distance, this is so very important, and where we're starting to see the increase in cases recently.
You know, I'm glad you said that nothing is perfect, because another complaint that I've heard about masks in general is that on some of these boxes of disposable masks that you buy, you'll see a warning on there, or more accurately described as a disclaimer, that says, this mask does not entirely prevent you from catching any particular disease. And that, to me, seems it's kind of akin to the warnings on a bottle of Lysol, for example, that says it kills 99.9% of germs. Well, I want the one that kills 100% of germs. Well, nothing is 100% effective. And just because it isn't 100% effective doesn't mean that it's 0% effective.
Exactly. We need to do our best in a situation that certainly is not ideal. And something is better than nothing, and everything we can do to help prevent the spread of COVID-19 needs to be our focus as a community. We are all responsible for the spread of COVID-19.
I know that the ordinance that Greenville County Council passed, and a number of other, you know, pieces of advice and legislation, as the case may be, have said that if people have other respiratory conditions that might make breathing difficult, that they are exempted from wearing a mask. What sorts of things do people need to be concerned? I've heard people complain about wearing a mask and finding it difficult to breathe. What do people need to be aware of regarding masks and making sure that they can still breathe properly?
Well, that's a very good question. And one, we want to be sensitive to the needs and the medical problems of the community and of our patients. And so this is a challenge, of course. We have individuals who perhaps have medical conditions that make it more difficult to breathe. At the same time, they're at the greatest risk of, if they contract COVID-19, of having some severe complications. So I would say pace yourself. And if you're having trouble breathing, making sure that the temperature is reasonable. Avoid going outside when it's 90 degrees. Avoid running your errands or activities when the weather is not going to be as comfortable as perhaps 80 degrees in the morning or the evening. I think that's very important to be mindful of. Wear your mask as much as possible. For those who absolutely cannot, we understand that sometimes that will be the case. That typically is the rare exception from a medical perspective. And in those cases, my recommendation as a physician is to stay home. Stay home as much as possible. If someone else can run your errands, that's good. If you need to have a doctor's visit, the best thing to do is a virtual visit, unless you absolutely need to be seen for an exam. We're in a heightened state in South Carolina. We're seeing it in the news. Nationally, we're hearing it on our radio stations, and so we've all got to have a heightened awareness of the risk around us.
Well, and the heightened situation that we find ourselves in is one of the things that I wanted to ask you about. We've talked before on this program, in fact, even recently, about the testing, the increased testing that Prisma Health and other organizations are doing here in the upstate and in South Carolina. I have to keep asking, do we know, have we learned anything new about these spikes that we're seeing, about where people are getting sick? Is it something that they've just kind of had the whole time, or are these actually new cases that are cropping up around the upstate? What's going on with the spikes?
We have learned so much more over the last several weeks of increasing access to testing through our community testing sites and through our drive-through testing tents. What has changed is we've moved from more of the older population getting exposed and skilled nursing facilities or nursing homes with high rates of COVID-19, a transition to a higher percentage of patients in our Hispanic community that are COVID-19 positive. But what's newest to us is the dramatic increase of individuals between the ages of 11 to 20, 20 to 30, and early 30s. With a dramatic increase in COVID-19 rates. And you may ask why. That may be your follow-up question, so I'll beat you to it, Chris.
Go ahead.
This is what we see in the public. If you look around in the communities, if you're looking at restaurants, if you're looking at bars and social settings, graduation parties, birthday parties, going to the beach and other locations, we are having lack of social distancing, masks not being worn by these younger populations. And perhaps it's because we've had people shut in for so long. People want to get out, and I totally understand. And here we have this risk, and we may be seeing or hearing that, well, I'm not going to get sick, or I just got a fever, and that's all. But there's a ripple effect, and this ripple effect is what I'm most concerned about. Our hospitalization numbers have grown dramatically over the last couple of weeks. We're seeing this across the state of South Carolina. We've also seen that once someone is positive, they can't go back to work, or they're not allowed to go to the school environment. So it's been an interesting several weeks to see this next phase of COVID-19 cases.
One of the reports that we've heard about this increased testing that's going on, again, through Prisma Health and through other organizations, are reports of long lines at some of the testing facilities, the mobile testing facilities that are set up throughout the communities. How is it going with Prisma sites? Are you seeing those long lines? Are people having to wait to get tested, or is it moving fairly quickly?
Indeed. This is a challenge across the board. Now, we've taken this week to learn from what our current process was, which was adequately handling the number of cases that needed to be tested. And then when those numbers went up by hundreds, we had to make a change in our process. So what was reported out within our health system today is we went from a two-hour wait earlier in the week because of how we were running our drive-through testing tents in the process. And because of some changes we've made, we've been able to shorten that wait to more like 45 minutes instead. still a significant weight considering what people were experiencing when we had much fewer cases in the community. I would anticipate that over time, we will be challenged with the same situation of what we're doing in Prisma Health of identifying future additional drive-through testing sites that we'll likely be sharing with you next week and locations that will provide further access for what we're anticipating to be a growing volume of symptomatic individuals who need testing.
So I gather people are coming to you. You're not having to go out and find people and convince them to come get tested. Is that right?
That is correct. We have no issues in people recognizing that they may be appropriate for testing. What is important is while we're inpatient, and I also understand it's so hot out, and we're having days now where we're reaching 90 degrees and higher. So people need to stay hydrated. They need to stay in the shade when they're in their cars, making sure their air conditioning is on so they're not overheating themselves. And please be patient. As we have all seen across South Carolina, the rise in cases, it's because of the rise in illness. So we will continue to identify sites for additional testing if necessary. We're ensuring that we have adequate space in our hospitals for those who are very sick and need to come in. We're anticipating the same in our ambulatory practices or our clinical practice sites. We do encourage individuals who are seeking outpatient care, if possible, do a virtual visit rather than an in-person exam. Ask your provider if this is something that would work for you. For one, because it limits that foot traffic, because we need fewer people out and about if possible. Now, if you need to be seen in the office, it is safe and we're keeping these places clean. At the same time, if you're healthy, also stay home and receive a virtual visit or a telehealth visit.
So you mentioned that you're not having any trouble getting people to come to you because they are recognizing that they may be candidates for testing. What is it? Have you gotten a sense of why they think that? Is it just a curiosity about the testing procedure, or is it that they've started exhibiting symptoms or have been around people that exhibit symptoms? I know some people think that a negative test result might be some sort of a certificate to go back to work or something like that. Why are people showing up now in these droves?
So the answer to the question would be yes, and yes, and yes.
Yes,
and
check them all off. Okay.
That's right. And let's unpack all the questions that you just asked, because they're all very important. We're seeing all kinds. We're seeing more patients with symptoms, and we definitely need to get them tested, treated, and quarantined so they're not exposing themselves to other individuals. We're seeing others who are curious. I wonder what this test is all about. And at our community testing site, since we're testing both asymptomatic and symptomatic, they're being tested there. And let's talk a moment about our employer space. And many employers are requiring employees to get a COVID-19 negative test before returning to work. There are several challenges with this. For example, let me start with the guidelines and the recommendations. OSHA and DHEC and CDC are all recommending that we're not doing widespread mass testing on everyone to return to work. We're finding this is not producing the results that I think people are seeking. They're seeking reassurance, I believe, and that security and that sense that it's a safe place. Well, I'll use the example of the Clemson football team recently, where a couple of weeks ago, we had 3 football players identified with COVID-19. The following week, there were 23.
Yeah.
So here's oftentimes what happens, that we all understand at this point, I believe, that once you're tested, that's at that point in time that your test is negative. But any future exposure, you are at risk for COVID-19. So we get this sense of security. Oh, it's not me. I'm safe. And everyone else around me is safe because they have also been tested. And then we go back to behaviors that are not safe. And we're not social distancing, or we're not wearing our masks, or even still, there's also risk that is out there for us. And then once we relax, and this is exactly what we've seen as we've reopened, in some cases have not practiced the best safety practices, we have COVID-19 everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I encourage our employers, and this is the Prisma Health message, we do not endorse that we're doing mass testing of everyone who's asymptomatic before they return to work. It's not giving you the results that they need, because then here's what happens. You may have a case where someone is positive for COVID-19, but they had symptoms weeks and weeks ago. And then as you retest those individuals, what we're experiencing and seeing in South Carolina and in Greenville is they can be positive for weeks and months. We have several that have been positive now for several months. And so you have taken them out of the workforce when they're not infectious. Just because that test is positive and they're no longer symptomatic does not mean that they're infectious and will give other people or transmit COVID-19 to their coworkers.
An important thing to keep in mind. Walk us through the testing procedure. We've talked about now all of these people are showing up and we kind of all know what it's like to stand in line. But when we get up to the front of the line and it's our turn to get tested, what exactly happens?
So it's important that people stay in their cars and you will have someone who will welcome you to the drive-through testing site or the community testing site, and they will walk you through the process. They will register you in the system. It's so very important that we have accurate information, Chris. We've had very few instances, but important situations where someone has received a positive COVID-19 test, and if we didn't have accurate telephone information or mailing address information, we have no way to contact that patient and give them those results. And knowing that COVID-19 is certainly a communicable disease that we're spreading in our community, we've got to be able to reach you. So once we have your registration complete, then you pass forward through the line and they will be testing the individual. They'll explain to you what happens. We're using a nasal swab and we use the phrase tickle your brain.
Okay.
And it can feel somewhat caustic, but it's necessary that we get an adequate specimen sample so that we can get an accurate test result. And then days later, we will contact that individual. We started off with calling people back within 24 hours once we had a routine process and were able to get the test process quickly. With the added volume, we're seeing a delay in that process. It can be anywhere between 2 to 4 days at this time. And if we continue to see the volume rise, we may see an extension in the time it takes to get those results back to the individual. So we're trying to stay on top of this. But of course, with the local disease burden, this will continue to challenge us.
And if people need to find those testing sites, how do they do that?
DHEC has a website with all the community testing sites available. We also have on our PrismaHealth.org website, the local testing sites. Of course, Greenville Memorial Hospital is still located in the same place in the garage. And as we add additional testing sites, we will make sure that is available through our websites. We'll communicate with our radio partners and our TV partners, as well as others, to make sure this is widespread knowledge that's available to everyone in the community.
And of course, some other websites where you can get more information, PrismaHealth.org/coronavirus. We'll have a lot of information about how Prisma Health is addressing the coronavirus epidemic here in the upstate on all fronts, not just the testing. And also PrismaHealth.org/access is how you can get access to that virtual medicine telehealth visit that Dr. Sicosio mentioned earlier. And you can find the latest coronavirus news at 1063WORD.com. Dr. Saria Sicosio, the Ambulatory Chief Medical Officer at Prisma Health, has again been my guest today. Thank you very much for coming back, Doctor.
Always a pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure, too. I'm Chris Evans, and this has been Focus on the Upstate.
You've been listening to Focus on the Upstate with Chris Evans. If you would like more information on today's topic, email Chris at cevans@intercom.com.